Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. Every week we try to live up to his high standards of hosting a discussion of current events laced with empathy, intelligence, humor, and progressive persuasion. Although Brian's concept was less or more or less, in reality, you could never get enough of Brian's magic in your life. Hey, around the Zoom info space again this week are some old hands you know well. Sitting next to me in the Voice of Vachon studio in beautiful downtown Vachon is former airline pilot and recovering back surgery patient.
Yeah.
My tree-rific partner in treetop landings, Truman O'Brien.
Thank you. Thank you.
Historian extraordinaire, skipper of the Vachona, president of the Vachon Heritage Museum, guardian of the galaxy, Bruce Holman is zooming in from his home on Vachon. We are also joined via Zoom by defender of democracy, Kevin Jones of Indivisible Vachon and the Vachon Climate Action Group, who collectively strive to create a livable planet overseen by a government we can all appreciate or at least tolerate.
Hey, that's me.
That's you, Kevin. That's right. This week, our special...
Good morning.
Good morning. Our special small talk guests today are three top-tier executives of CMAR Community Health Center. We have Mary Bartolo, Executive Vice President, Mike Leon, Vice President of Corporate and Legal Affairs, and Jesus Sanchez, Senior Vice President of Operations for the Northern Region. Welcome to the three of you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
You're welcome. These decision makers will talk about CMAR's clinic and other healthcare plans for Vachon, including their economic viability and prospects for remaining here long term, something Vachonites are all interested in, of course. Mine is the voice of Craig Bellis, serial nonprofit board member, part-time international arbitrator and mediator, and plane crash survivor, at least physically. Before we dive into our small talk segment, let's invite a moment of introspection from our guests and crew about their past week. What's going on in your world, Truman?
Well, as you said, I'm recovering. I'm getting better. I can actually walk pretty well these days from the back surgery. But I have to tell you, I've always wanted a drone, you know. And the reason I've wanted one is because I'm a pilot, right? And I thought that'd be really fun. But then I flew those little things, and boy, they were miserable to fly. I mean, they were really hard to fly.
Put them into the trees.
Oh, phew, all the time. I mean, just the little guys. Well, this weekend, or just the past week, we had a fellow come out and take some photographs for us at our Sunrise Ridge studio. And those darn things fly themselves now. And I said, I got to have one. So one's coming today. So there you go.
It's like the helicopter that saved us out of the woods.
Exactly.
You put it in
hover mode, and yeah. It just sat right there.
That's right.
Pretty amazing.
I didn't hear I was going to say no droning on, but it's a different drone.
There's no explosives on this drone,
We don't think so. No.
Hey, Bruce, what's new in your history-laden world?
Oh, history's always new, right? But we actually, the museum is having a small opening for Audubon this Friday evening. Audubon Birds, for the sale of their annual Audubon Bird calendar. And then December 2nd, we'll have a more formal opening of the exhibit. But chance to come in and see seasonal birds on Vachon. Beautiful photographs and bird songs and that kind of thing. The other fascinating thing to me is I've been researching Ellisport, where I live, small community here on the island, and we discovered that every property in Ellisport has a provision in your legal description that you cannot have alcohol on your property.
What?
Because Ellisport was originally part of the Chautauqua. It was a Chautauqua assembly grounds, which were sort of very actively prohibition in the late 19th and early 20th century, but also discovered there was a bar in Ellis Point down at the bottom of the hill of the hill coming down from the high school that burned in 1939, but it was called Happy Jack's. So you've got anti-alcohol and one of the few bars at that time on Vashon.
That's cool. That's
always interesting.
Wonderful history. Kevin, you no doubt have been somewhat busy with election matters. What are you going to share with us this morning?
Well, it's in the last 24 hours, I think I've gone somewhere in the 50,000 text range. And the good news of that is I've been able to help, I think, somewhere around 20 to 25 voters find their way to their polling locations. So, it's a busy time right now. And the good news is for those who are really passionate about democracy and making sure people vote, those ballots that don't quite get filled out quite right, that's called ballot chasing, to contact the voter and make sure that they can fix any problems with their ballot. So that's going to be going on for a little while now. So plenty of opportunities to stay involved in the process.
Okay. Mary Bartolo, can you share anything you've been up to for the last week? Maybe something not in the healthcare area.
Sure. Good morning. Thank you for having us. Well, in my downtime, healthcare, particularly in the last couple of years, has been pretty stressful. So in my downtime, I like to cook and bake, and spending time with my family is really important to me. And I just got back. It's my first week back after being fortunate enough to spend 3 weeks in Italy visiting family who live there, and a few days in Paris. So that was a really good downtime for me and an enjoyable trip.
Wow. Doesn't get much better than that.
That's for sure.
No.
That's great. Michael, with the beautiful blue skyline of Seattle behind you, you have anything you want to share with us?
Well, I will attest to Mary's baking skills. No. Every so often she brings in a pretty good apple pie into the office. It's autumn now, and so I've been enjoying the fall colors. But what that also means is that I've been busy this past week doing a lot of raking.
Yeah. Indeed. Yeah, I know. That goes with the territory. Jesus.
Hi, good afternoon, or good morning. I guess it's still right around the morning portion. Good morning. I'm Jesus. And yeah, you know, for me, outside of the healthcare, for me has been somewhat like Mary. I do have some little hobbies. One is obviously playing music. I love blues, and so I play a lot of that since I was 10 or 12 years. But lately, as you can see here, I've got a little bit of a thumb and a nerve issue going on. So I'm in a little bit of a hand brace that I'm using now for my thumb for a little bit. But nursing that and trying to get back into some music in my downtime, as well as spend time with my grandchildren.
That's great.
What do you play? What do you play, Jesus?
Pretty much anything on the blues side of things.
No, I mean, what instrument? What instruments?
I'm sorry. I play the guitar.
Okay, cool.
Okay. Yeah, it's amazing how debilitating that little brace on your thumb can be. How difficult it makes things. Yeah, you lose that prehensile ability.
Yeah.
Again, my name's Craig. And my last week, I celebrated Halloween here in the studio, handing out candy, and also celebrated the Day of the Dead with an ofrenda at our house in honor of the children and the grownups that have gone on beyond, and the veil was at its thinnest during those days, so we welcomed them back with offerings and candles and whatnot. We always celebrate that. And I was also celebrating my third in a row Texas Hold'em number one take it all win.
Get out. This is, I'm one of those guys that plays him, and we're all going to gang up on him, I think, soon.
They're trying to move me around the table.
Yeah, somewhere.
Hey, today is Tuesday. Everybody knows that. It's November 8th, 2022, Election Day, and I had a quick Jeopardy question for you. Has the election in the United States in the last 100 years or so ever been held on November 1st? Anybody know offhand? Bruce knows. He's got his hand up. Kevin's shaking no. Why would that be? Bruce, you had your hand up first.
Yep. Actually, Election Day is in 1845. It was set on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November. And that, the reason for that right. was that it had to be 34 days before the Electoral College met. Mm. Well, Electoral College has moved around several times. And now Electoral College, I think, is the second Wednesday or the first Monday after the second Wednesday in December. All this complicated kind of wow. of legal stuff. But no, so there's never been an election day on November 1st, because November 1st, if it falls on a Tuesday, is not after the first Monday.
So. That's right. That's right. Which sort of begs the question, a little gloss on this, why November? Why is this all sort of set up in November?
Well, it was all set up on the federal level.
Right.
To correspond with the meeting of the Electoral College. Mm-hmm. So federal elections were set up. And then they, in 1845, they standardized it nationwide, even though we weren't what we are today. But set it up so that November became federal election day, and the states all adopted that.
Right. My understanding is that November also, earlier on, when states decided when they were going to hold their elections, you had an agrarian society, and you wanted the elections to be after the harvest and before the winter, or before the hard winter. Why Tuesday? Voters from remote areas didn't have to travel on a Sunday. We didn't want to have them have to travel and stay overnight. And why the Tuesday following the first Monday? That's because merchants typically use the first to tally their books. So that's where it all fits together. So there are 16 days until Thanksgiving, 47 days till Christmas, 54 days till the New Year's. So you better start doing your shopping. Today is National Cappuccino Day, National Harvey Wallbanger Day, which is just a fancy screwdriver. Add a little Galliano. And National STEM Day. STEM Day being a day encouraging students to pursue careers in science, technology, engineering, and math. And with that, we will make the segue, speaking of science, into the area of medicine and healthcare. Mary, Mike, and Jesus, thank you for joining us and your willingness to be transparent with the citizens of Vashon-Morey Island about the plans for the health clinic. Since this is your first time on the Brown Briefly, can you tell our audience briefly a little bit about yourselves and what you do at CMAR? Mary?
Sure. Well, as you said, my name is Mary Bartolo. I was actually born here in Seattle, so I'm one of the few native Seattleites that I know. And I've actually been working with CMAR since they very first opened in April of 1978.
Wow.
And my responsibilities are a bit varied, but I work primarily assisting our CEO in the oversight of general operations. Currently, our VP is in charge of medical and dental operations, as well as our VP for behavioral health, preventive health services, and long-term care all report to me. So very involved in day-to-day operations of most of our programs.
Okay. Mike?
Well, I've been associated with CMAR since 1981 as a member of its board of directors. And I've been working here at CMAR for about 22 years or so as essentially general counsel. And so I handle CMAR's legal work, risk management, and other sort of things.
All right. Thank you. And Jesus, how about you?
Well, my responsibilities, as Mary indicated, is the operational side of the clinics, which encompasses Whatcom County, Skagit County, Snohomish County, and King County. 17 clinics total throughout the region, working with also pharmacies, medical and dental clinics that we have where they're combined, and also oversee the 340B program within CMAR. Stay pretty busy with that. I've been with CMAR now going on 7 years, but I've been over at supporter of CMR for the last 25, 30 years as a supporter helping to raise funds for scholarship and education. So it's been a long time as an advocate for CMR and a long time volunteer for CMR as well, because I believe in what they've been doing for all these many years. I also actually worked for a short stint with CMR back in 1983 to 1986, and then was pinged by the county. But my passion has been working, and the commitment that they have at CMR is where it fits for me perfectly to give back to the community. So this is where I'm at.
Okay. Great. It's good to have that little bit of background on all of you and what you do. Let me set the stage here. I'm going to do a real quick summary, and then you can correct me where I may have got it wrong or emphasized something too much or too little. After the departure of Neighbor Care on the island and subsequent contact by the Vashon Healthcare District, CMAR agreed in October of 2020 to assume operations of the clinic at Sunrise Ridge. Because Neighbor Care had been operating at a loss, the Vashon Healthcare District agreed to subsidize your operations by basically the amount of the loss that Neighbor Care had been experienced, which was $1.5 million per year. You agreed, CMAR agreed, and has been subsidized to that tune of nearly $3 million for 2 years. After a little rocky communications a few months ago, which included CMAR indicated it intended to leave the island, CMAR had a change of heart, decided to stay with a conversation about a reduced or eliminated subsidy, a talk of plans for a new clinic building, and potential expanded services. And that is kind of brings us up to the present. Does that comport with your understanding of basically those facts? Have I misstated anything there?
No, I think that's basically true. I think that we did agree to come in and provide healthcare services. I mean, we were in the middle of a pandemic, but I think it was really important to us that an area like Vashon that really is isolated from access to care didn't go without care. And from the beginning, I think it had always been our intent. We did want to come in with a subsidy because a $1.5 million loss is a lot to take on. And our intent had always been, though, that the subsidy amount, it was based on the losses of the previous provider, but we had always intended to make that clinic viable facility, and felt that it could get to a point of being stable and breaking even, if not reducing the loss quite significantly. So it had been always our intent from the beginning to at some point be able to eliminate that subsidy.
Well, we'll dive into that in a little more in just a second. You did bring up an interesting point about what your clinics do and where they're at and who they serve. I mean, what is the classic patient base and goal of CMAR? Is it primarily underserved communities, or how would you characterize it?
I think it varies. As you know, we're all along the Western I-5 corridor and out to the coast in Aberdeen and Ocean Shores in Grays Harbor County. And I think it really varies by county, but CMAR is a nonprofit community-based organization, and our mission is to serve people who are in underserved communities. So we do have a significant portion of our patients who are low-income, Medicaid, uninsured, Medicare, but also we do have sites where geographic isolation is an issue and affects access for people. So I think that is another population where we like to address need, because access is important for everyone. And our facilities are open to everybody, regardless of ability to pay. We've always taken all sorts of insurance, including all private insurances, unless they're a closed system like group health used to be.
And it's my understanding you intend to continue doing that, to take multiple different insurance companies, or virtually all insurance. Is that right?
Correct. Absolutely.
Okay. Including Medicare and Medicaid when appropriate,
yes.
Et cetera.
All yes.
Right. I'm curious. You said that when you came to the island, it was your intent to not have to rely on a subsidy forever. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So therefore, I take it you've done pro formas of what it would take to break even in running a clinic on the island.
Yeah, I think after we had been there a year, in looking at our financials, which we've been providing all along, it was, I think there was a much larger Medicare population than we had initially knew about. And so that helped lessen the loss that we have. So, I think looking at our financials and potential growth of the clinic, we felt that it would get to a point where the losses could be minimized.
Well, where are you right now, or where do you think you'll be after the first of the year with regards to the need for a subsidy? No subsidy, partial subsidy, reduced subsidy, same subsidy. What do you think?
Well, I think it's good to have a subsidy. It helps on the bottom line and for us to be able to expand. I mean, whenever we have any type of profit from our clinics, we're able to expand services and add services, things such as care management, health education, nutrition services, things of that nature. But we're also in a position where I think if we don't have that subsidy, we'll be able to operate and cover some small losses on our own from operations in general from the organization.
Now, you say you think you'd be able to cover from the corporation, I guess, the entire budget to a certain degree. Would you have to cut back on any of your services if you didn't have a subsidy?
No, I don't believe we wouldn't have to cut back on anything. We're a pretty strong, fiscally strong organization, and we have clinics in areas that do well and some that don't do as well as others. And we've always managed to cover losses in clinics with the revenue we've generated from other programs and sites.
And where does CMAR's income primarily come from? Is it from insurance, or is it from grants, or where is it from?
Well, I think that's one of the things that have helped make us a very strong or fiscally strong organization is we have not relied on just one source of income. We have a multitude of grants that cover programs and services that we provide. And also our patient-generated revenue. I think our patient-generated revenue actually provides the largest portion of our income. And so it is from Medicaid, Medicare, commercial insurance, people paying privately, and then our grants that we have, and we have several hundred grants.
Truman.
Yeah, this gets to, I used to be on the board of the Vashon Community Care, and I know that one of the big issues was the patient mix or the payer mix, and that was always a huge issue of how many private pays do you take compared to, you know, Medicaid, Medicare, and all of that. Is this something that you folks juggle all the time in coming up with your income?
Yeah, I mean, again, our payer mix is different in every community or location that we're in. Medicaid and Medicare are generally good sources of revenue for us. And in general, I think our Medicaid for organizationally is about 50% of our population, where Medicare is only 8%. Both of those are good sources of revenue. On Vashon, our Medicare population is much higher than it is. It's 34%
wow.
On Vashon, where it's only 8%
wow.
Overall for the organization. So what we're lacking a little bit in Medicaid revenue on Vashon, I think the Medicare helps make up for that.
One thing I want to stress is that CMAR doesn't turn away anybody who wants to come into our clinics for care. Regardless of what their, insurance plans are, regardless of whether they're uninsured. You know, we take people who are low income, uninsured, and put them on a sliding fee scale, but we do not turn away any patient that walks into our doors.
As long as the patients are there with needs that you can meet. Obviously, you're not set up to do everything and every specialty for every individual.
Oh, no. We're primarily a primary care organization, although we are developing some specialty care within CMAR in order to meet our patients' needs, but we are primarily primary care.
Okay. Well, that brings up a huge question. I recently, as you heard, had back surgery, and I found that the referral process between CMAR and Kaiser was horrible. I mean, absolutely horrible. They virtually didn't talk to each other. And it took a very much of me advocating for myself in order to get that referral. Is this something that you encounter often, or is this something that, I mean, because you take so many different insurances, is that part of the issue?
Well, I think referrals in some communities we're in, and I'm not speaking necessarily directly to Vashon, there are providers who don't want to take people who are uninsured or on Medicaid and Medicare. It can get difficult to do referrals. It is an area that we're working really hard on improving the referral process and system from within our EHR to our staff working on it as well. I'm not sure what the issues were in this particular case, but our referrals for the most part do go fairly smoothly. So where we do have difficulty is when we're in communities where we can't find specialists who will take the insurance types that we have. Right. So outside of that, they've typically gone pretty smoothly. So I'd have to look into what the specific issues were in your particular case.
You'll have to take that little anecdotal. And it wasn't little, because I had Truman and I own an airplane together, and I've seen him go through this trying to get a referral, and it was
difficult. Next to impossible. Yeah. Well, part of the issue was at Kaiser's fault, because they didn't know how to deal with that referral. So, and I wrote a letter saying, can't you folks talk to each other and figure this out? I mean, it seems like I don't want to get off in the weeds here, but
that's all right.
Yeah.
Near and dear to your back.
Indeed. Yeah.
Getting back to the finances, it's my understanding that the subsidy of $1.5 million was not really needed, not all of it, for operations. Is that correct over the last 2 years?
Maybe. Well, I wouldn't say that it was not needed. I mean, we went in not really knowing what. I mean, it was based off of the previous operations losses. And I think when we were going after a year, we had initiated before our conversations really broke apart with the health district. We had talked about reducing that subsidy because we found ourselves in a better position than we had initially thought we would be. And so that's why we had offered to reduce that subsidy by the $400,000.
Okay, I meant when I asked that question, I meant in terms of retrospect. When you look at your year ends, you determined that you were covered by the 1.5, and perhaps even in the second year, the 1.5 did more than make up any shortfalls you might have had. Is that correct or not? In retrospect, looking back. My question is where did all of the 1.5 go? Did it go to different places, different budget lines? I think that's information that's been turned over to the healthcare district.
I don't have our financials in front of me at this point, but it went to the operations of the clinic, so salaries and benefits and equipment costs. We had to buy all new equipment when we came in. So computers for EHR, the systems had to change over. We had to move into our version of Epic. So those are all, IT is a costly undertaking. And so it went in general, I would say, to all aspects of operations.
Yeah, the thing I was just confused about is your offer to reduce the subsidy basically speaks to the issue of we didn't need all 1.5 of the subsidy, but you continued to get the 1.5, and I just wondered where that excess ended up going. So maybe that's not something that you're able to answer without having those financials right in front of you.
Yeah.
All right.
I think that's correct.
Okay.
Hey, Kevin wants to say something?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm curious, you know, there's this, healthcare history on Vashon with various agencies providing healthcare services. As you point out, some of that financial support went to infrastructure purchasing and capital investment, if you will. What happens to that infrastructure in the event that CMAR decides to move to a different location away from Vashon? Is that a leave behind for the next provider, or is it so unique that it really would go with CMAR and be a sunk cost, if you will, for Vashon and Maury Islanders?
Yeah, well, I think pieces of that, especially when you're looking at IT or individually to any healthcare provider, everybody is operating their own electronic health record system, and there's a cost to converting data over and getting equipment in general. So, I mean, the software pieces and the maintenance and licensing costs are not really costs that can transfer over to anybody.
Well, okay. that does bring up a related question, and it has to do with the Spinnaker building. It's my understanding that you were in negotiations to close on the Spinnaker building sometime here in the last couple weeks. Can you address that? Where are you with regards to the Spinnaker building?
Well, we're looking to close on that purchase fairly soon. And, you know, it's our hopes that, you know, we'll be able to work on an agreement with the health district to extend our lease over at Sunrise Ridge for a longer period of time so that we can do what is necessary to build a new facility at the Spinnaker site that will be able to accommodate a much more efficient clinic operation.
So, would the plan be to stay at Sunrise until you've built a new building there or remodeled the Spinnaker building?
Well, that depends on how successful we are in our discussions with the health district. Our preference would be that the health district would allow us to stay at Sunrise Ridge while we build a new facility.
Okay, which would mean taking that building down and building on that space.
Yes, that would be preferable. But if we can't work that out, then our second choice in terms of plans would be to remodel the existing building so that we can immediately begin providing services at the old Spinnaker building, and then after that, build a new clinic.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's important for us that the goal is to not have a break in services and access to services for the patients.
Okay. You know, Vashonites, Vashon Maury Island residents, are grateful for having a healthcare center on the island. We've been through transitions. We've seen healthcare providers come and go. But at the same time, we are an opinionated group. It's the old expression, you get five of us together, ask a question, you'll get 10 answers.
That's right.
A classic example of that is the Vashon Arts Center, Center for the Arts, down in the center here. The building, there was a lot of controversy over the way that building was built, the shape of the building, the environmental considerations regarding the building, the materials that were used for the building. What are your plans for encouraging the public input with regards to a new clinic building? Or do you have any?
Well, we've had a lot of experience. I mean, we've been operating and building clinics now for over 40 years, mm-hmm. Close to 45 years. And, you know, we work with an architectural firm who's very familiar with what our operational needs are, what our patient flow is, and all. And it's been very successful in designing buildings that meet our operational needs. And we took the health district commissioners on a tour to our facility in Des Moines, and I think that they were very much impressed by what they saw. And so, our number one priority is building a facility that is designed to meet the way we provide care at our facilities. I think that's, again, that'll be our primary focus. We are willing to share our design schematics and the way we're thinking about building this facility with the community. And we're more than happy to receive input so that our architect can consider them as well.
That would be propitious, because if you don't, this is not a threat. This is just a fact. I've lived here for 35 years. You will get that input one way or the other.
Yes. Whether requested or not.
That's exactly right. It's much better if you request it than rely on people standing out there in front of your building handcuffed to a large machine.
The pitchforks and torches come out.
Exactly.
Right?
That's right. I would encourage you to continue to engage the community with regards to any building that you have. But getting back to the issue that was brought up before, I think that Kevin just brought up, is God forbid, what if circumstances were such that you decided this is not working out for various reasons? We're leaving the island after you've built the building.
Well, in our 45-year history, or more exact 44-year history, we have never left a community.
Until the community drives you crazy.
Pardon?
Until the community drives you crazy, yeah.
Well, we work with a very diverse range of communities. And they each have very, very particular characteristics and desires and demands. That's something we're accustomed to in terms of working with a particular community. Our commitment is that we are going to stay on Vashon. The fact that we're, putting resources into purchasing property and constructing a facility is a reflection on our intent to stay for the long term.
Bruce.
Oh, I just had a question of, I mean, we appreciate what CMAR is doing and coming in and sort of running the clinic, and it's been very successful. My question is really about, we're going through a rough period of communications, if you will, between the healthcare district and CMAR. What in your ideal world is the way that's going to work best for both CMAR and for the healthcare district and for Vashon Islanders? I mean, what's the ideal sort of outcome of this?
Well, I think Mike talked a little bit about it when we were talking about our plans. I mean, ideally we would, first I'd like to say, we're happy that we're back at the table and having good communication with the health district, and we recognize, their role and appreciate their role in ensuring healthcare to the community there. But we also, as an independent healthcare organization, need to be able to operate our facilities the way we need to. So for us, I think ideally it would be that we could come to an agreement where we could stay in the facility that we're in and be there until a new clinic was built, so we didn't have to spend resources remodeling a site, because again, we don't want to have there be no access. So if we can't come to that lease agreement, we would need to remodel a building to provide clinic services that we wouldn't use any longer after the new facility was built. So we'd like to stay where we are until a new facility can be built, as Mike said, share our designs with the community, and then we could build on that entire piece of property. I mean, we're still interested in looking at housing, affordable housing there on the island. We've got experience doing that as well, and we'd like to expand services and have a fully integrated primary care system there with medical, dental, and programs to address behavioral health needs.
You're aware of the fact, obviously, that the healthcare district purchased a piece of property south of town by Kathy's Corner down just south of here. Is there any opening or thought about utilizing that property to start from scratch rather than having to tear down a building with it that has what appears like limited parking? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's not something that's been discussed, and we've got this piece of property we've purchased too. I think there's lots of needs there in the community. I mean, urgent care I've heard talked about a lot. I've heard specialty care being an issue, housing, which affects health in many ways. I heard there were other programs. Okay. That the health district was looking at doing besides a health clinic. We haven't had a discussion about what you're speaking to, that we would scrap any idea of what we're planning now and building on that property. That has not come up as a topic of discussion.
Well, it may. You may have heard the interview that we did with the healthcare district a couple of weeks ago. And one of the points that they were making that you probably haven't heard much of, but maybe you have recently, is that they feel it's much better talking to one another rather than talking about one another. And I think that's probably where you're at as well. That's always a better way to go. Putting my mediator hat on. just a few more things before we run out of time. Vashon has a fair large number of Latinos. They say, even though the census says it's lower, it may approach close to 1,000 are the estimates of some people. And many of those individuals go off island because of the various services that are offered in your facilities. Some of them leave the island because they say there are no translation services at Seymour on the island. There are no bilingual doctors, and there are no individuals to interpret for them. So it's impossible to communicate. Are you thinking about doing anything to try to address that issue?
Yes, we are actually. I mean, one of the things when we came initially that was important to us was to make sure that any of the staff who were there didn't lose their jobs, and if they wanted to remain, that they could remain. And so that was a big priority. And as we grow and through attrition, we're looking to recruit bicultural staff. We try to do that in all communities where we are. In Clark County, we serve a significant Russian-speaking population as well, so we focused on hiring staff from those communities. So yes, is the short answer, that we are looking for hiring and expanding services and bringing in some bilingual bicultural staff in Vashon. But I'd like to say that we do have translation services available. We've got Language Line available to us. And so we can arrange for in-person interpreters at times. So if we know there's a need for interpretation, we can meet that need.
Well, that's good to hear, because I have heard again anecdotally otherwise. So that brings me to a related subject. I've also been told by local citizens that there's a lack of medical assistance under hire at the Vashon Clinic over the last year has created ongoing stress upon valued practitioners and impacted patient movement through the clinic. Can you confirm that longstanding challenge is being addressed or thought about?
Healthcare workforce in general is a significant challenge currently, and not just for CMAR, but for all healthcare providers everywhere. There is a big shortage. I think the global pandemic has resulted in a lot of people leaving healthcare. And it is a struggle to find not only medical assistants, but all positions within healthcare. And I think you'll see that happening across the nation. We do have a program. We have a medical assistant apprenticeship program that we're currently operating. We have, I believe, 24 to 30 staff members who are in that program right now. And it's also one of the ways we hope to engage in Vashon with the bilingual issue is reaching out to the Latino community there, because we can take personnel who or individuals who are interested in becoming medical assistants and train them at our facilities to become medical assistants. And they don't have to pay the costs of tuition for the program or any of that. That all falls on us through grants and other means, and at no cost, they'll get paid while they learn to be a medical assistant, and then they just take the state test. So we're hoping through that apprenticeship program, we can address some of the need that we're experiencing throughout our sites for the shortage in medical assistants.
Just as a note, this is Jesus. Yeah, we do have apprentices that we're targeting for Vashon as well.
Okay, that was my next question. Yeah, right.
Yeah, and you know, fresh out of high school, you know, we can start training. If anyone from the Vashon community is interested in that field, this is really a great opportunity.
Great. How do they follow up?
All they need to do is call the health administrator there. I'll stop by with the health administrator, which is Carrie Barnes. Or they can just send an email to myself, for example, Jesus Sanchez.
Yeah, people could contact our administrative office too. So they can pretty much contact CMAR anyway and say that they're interested in the medical assistant apprenticeship program. I think we have a new cohort of students starting approximately every 6 months. So, and we'd love to find people who live there on the island who would be interested in going through the program.
Yeah, I just want to say thank you very much for that. When I was at Vashon Community Care, we had a CNA training program the same way, and it's an excellent program, and I really commend you for doing that. Thank you.
Another question that you touched upon had to do with specialties, providing special services beyond primary care. That's always something I think that's in CMAR's the back of mind or front of mind, perhaps. In terms of Vashon, what will determine what services and whether those services are offered here?
You know, we are developing our group of specialists, our specialty providers, and, you know, we're using telemedicine as a way of making sure that the limited number of specialty providers that we have are able to support all of our clinics. And so that's one approach. We obviously can't set up a specialty clinic at each and every one of our sites.
But one of the nice things is that we have a lot of our specialists are in our White Center clinic that is pretty accessible, I think, for people on the island, because for specialty care now, I believe everybody has to come across anyway, and it's not very far from it's only like 10 minutes from the Vashon Ferry, and we've got a number of specialties now and hope to grow that in the future too. But they do consult with our doctors as well who are in any of our sites.
So when you do set up specialty programs or specialty care, I take it you try to engage the other providers in the area who are not part of CMAR. Because on Vashon, if you did that, there would be some concern. You'd want to coordinate to a certain degree, would you not?
I'm not sure that I'm really clear on the question.
Well, we have other healthcare providers, and I'm just wondering right now, for example, if you had a dental program. Would you be talking to the dentist offices on the island?
Yes, I see. When we're expanding services Correct. That are already existing. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, what we try to do is refer our patients to other providers in the area that, you know, where we don't have those specialty providers. And we want to work with the community the provider community to accept our referrals.
Okay.
But unfortunately, a lot of them won't accept the referrals because of the rates that they are being paid by the state. And so unfortunately, if that's the case, then we do have to look at developing our own, specialty care internally.
That reminded me, I was going to ask earlier, do you folks have the rural designation that for Medicaid and Medicare reimbursement for Vashon? I mean, I know that the state did have the rural designation that increased the amount that they pay. Does that work for you folks, and is that still applicable?
Yeah, well, CMAR is a federally qualified health center, so we do have our cost-based reimbursement for Medicaid and Medicare.
So does that rural designation, does that apply here, or?
A rural designation, you can have an FQHC designation or a rural health center designation, and, right. or a lookalike designation, and they all will pay the cost, so it's the same thing, basically.
Okay. Yeah, I know that we were turned down for that often because we're close to other facilities, even though we have a moat around us. But I just didn't know if that applied. Okay.
I only have one last question in the limited time we've got here. As I think we've shared with you, and you know that, the community is rather insecure regarding healthcare services here for fear that providers may come and go. You've indicated that you've never left a community, so it's not your intention to do so, and you're not going to be investing the kind of investment in the community with an intention to go. However, it's always a possibility. Are you in a position to be able to commit to any particular time, length of time that you would be on the island that people can count on you?
Well, again, we intend to stay indefinitely, but it would be unpredictable for us to, commit to any specific time frame because we don't know what's going to happen with, the funding world on the federal or state level, what's going to happen in terms of how, healthcare is going to continue to evolve. So. I don't know whether we can say we'll be there definitely for 10 years, 20 years, 40 years, but we do intend to be there indefinitely.
All right. Okay. I thank you all very much for being here, and it's been quite enlightening. I would continue to encourage you to talk with our fiduciaries, our healthcare district that has subsidized you to the tune of $3 million over the last 2 years. And thank you again for being here, not only here on the show, but being here on the island.
Absolutely.
In the last few minutes, I don't run away. if you can stay, please do. We're going to discuss one little tiny topic. Today, obviously, is Election Day in America. The Brookings Institute estimates that there are approximately 350 election deniers on the ballot, all Republicans, 22 of 36 governor elections, 12 of 27 secretary of states, 19 of 35 Senate positions. Are all individuals who do not feel that the last election was a valid election and the wrong person was elected, even in light of people like Attorney General Barr saying otherwise. Many of these candidates will have a great influence over state and federal elections. You keep hearing the expression, democracy is on the ballot. What does that mean? Do you really think that democracy is threatened in this election? Anyone?
Well, CMAR is a tax-exempt nonprofit entity, so we're constrained in terms of being able to comment
have an
on
opinion, right?
Races.
I do understand that. I'm sure you have your own personal opinions, but I do understand that position. Yeah. Kevin, you don't. You're not so restrained.
I'm unconstrained, unrestrained, and happy to share my opinions. Some countries have what I've heard termed a managed democracy. And you can argue that in the United States, there's some management to a democracy in terms of who gets on the ballot. What are the rules for getting on the ballot? It's not just anybody can walk up and get on the ballot. But some countries you're not going to get on the ballot unless the de facto leadership wants you on the ballot. And you might vote in that election and you might be really obliged to vote or even required to vote, but your choices are really not reflective of those who are in a position or willing or would like to run because they've been blocked. And in some cases, the vote totals are just extraordinarily surprising. Like 97% people voted for the current leader, and they tend to vote for the current leader over and over, ad infinitum. Managed democracies are not a true democracy. People who are, I hear the term election denier, I totally get that. I would maybe like to think about election respecters. So the notion of denying an election means you don't have one, or people choose to opt out. I don't think that's what we're hearing, frankly. I think, although election deniers is a term that I can live with, I really think it's the fact that people don't respect the vote and don't really honestly count the vote.
Yeah, let me just jump in too and say, hey, we've seen 200 plus years of America moving from a very constrained democracy. You had to be white, you had to be male, you had to own property, to continually moving toward more and more access into the concept of one person, one vote. Still a long way to go, and there's been lots of examples where that hasn't happened. But the question today, I think, is whether or not we'll see a pause or a retreat in that general movement that's been going on for 200 years, or will we see a retreat away from that? So that's why I think it's a critical election.
I think it's a little frightening. We won't find out today, will we? We'll probably find out a week or a month or whatever from now. So put on your patience hat. It'll be a while, no doubt. Tell you what, join us next week for our small talk segment when our guests will be Amy Carey, Executive Director of Sound Action. I want to thank Mary, Mike, and Jesus, Bruce, Kevin, Truman, and I'm Craig Bellis. Until we meet again, thank you for listening to the Brown Briefly.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.